sexy, huh?
We move into the second half of Darren Donick and Chase. Willie Donick here with you. Elijah Campbell behind the glass. Chase and Darren are off today. We continue to talk a little football here, as we have been really throughout the morning. Tim Hasselbeck is with us for his weekly spot. Tim, what's going on?
How are you, Willie?
I am doing well.
Great. How are you? Yeah.
Well, let's start. Tim, it's a great day to have you on because, there, as you know, there's been quite a bit of quarterback news, and there's a lot of pretty interesting choices going on right now, or competitions. But let's start with the obvious one, with Carson Wentz and the injury that he has suffered. Number one, if you were the GM and you hear that, and the trainer comes to you and says he's out anywhere from 5 to 12 weeks, how do you react to that? That's a very wide range of outcomes.
It is. I think you say, okay, well, when, are we going to, so before surgery, is it 5 to 12? And then after surgery, do we have a better sense that, okay, yeah, it's going to be 7 or it's going to be 9? And then I think that, as we sit here at the very beginning of August, there you have the benefit of time, right, versus this being, September 10th getting that news. So, sense of, all right, like, are we going to learn more post-surgery? Because I don't think that with the roster that they have built, I don't think that they have a quarterback on their roster that they could feel good about. Now, maybe Jacob Eason's the guy, but I think that before you decide that Jacob Eason's the guy, you would have to go find out, is there somebody else that can play at a really high level? Because we maybe have a Super Bowl caliber roster.
Well, let's back it up and let's talk Eason first. I don't know how much you studied him coming out of the draft. We know there's no book on him in NFL games yet. Certainly our listeners are familiar with him, with his track record at Georgia and the whole soap opera that took place there. But they seem to like what they've seen so far, at least internally. They're posturing that way. So what do you think of him?
Yeah, so I think that you bring up a good point about Georgia, and the reality is that kind of how things have gone down there with quarterbacks in the past. I've just seen with college football, for example, like Justin Fields, in his experience, or I'll give you another one, Jamie Newman, who, we've talked about in the past, who transferred there and then sat out the year after playing great at Wake Forest. I do think you can be a kind of use that as the blanket statement. Look, he's a big guy. He kind of is the older typical NFL quarterback in that he's big, he's got a big arm. He's not necessarily going to move around as much as some of the players that we're seeing nowadays. Like, he is not Justin Herbert. At the same time, I think he moves around better than some other kind of pure passers that we've seen in the past. The thing I would say is, I just don't think that roster is, like, could they win with a young quarterback? Sure. And maybe they just think, look, we need to, if we're not going to have Carson Wentz for 6 games, can we go 3-3 with Jacob Eason? And maybe they think they can with their run game and their defense. And so I think if you're Chris Ballard, then maybe that's the approach you go with it. But, I would still want to know, what is the Nick Foles situation? What is the Philip Rivers situation? Like, is there somebody else that we should be thinking about right now?
How much time would you take before you made a decision on that? You just talked about a couple of things. You can watch and see how Eason looks over the next few weeks as he has a chance to take these big reps and maybe even play in a preseason game or two. And then you can kind of scour and see what it would take to bring in somebody else. But how much time would you take before you pulled the trigger on something?
Yeah, I think with somebody like Rivers, I don't think you're getting Rivers back unless he thinks he's playing in the postseason. Job back over to Wentz. So, I think that the Rivers option is only if you don't have another option and Wentz is not coming back. The Foles option, a lot of it is going to depend on, what you know, like his Foles contract, what you're on the hook for, because, you know, you still have Wentz under contract. So, you know, that's what you'd have to deal with. So because you have kind of those variables, you know, I think right now you say, yeah, look, we're all in on Jacob Eason, and we're going to make him believe that we believe in him and see if he proves us right. So I think you have the benefit of time for that. You kind of, your timeline can adjust based on how he performs. And so, I would at a minimum want to see him play a lot in a preseason game.
The Foles thing is interesting. From a fantasy angle from way back, it sounds like a great storyline, and there's the history with Reich. But what about the chemistry between Wentz and Foles? How would you deal with that? Is that a potential caution?
It is. And I'm only bringing in Foles if, you know, I'm going past the halfway mark with no Carson Wentz. So, I'm thinking of it that way. And I think Nick would feel probably a similar way about it. I don't know if you've seen, Willie, the Nick Foles kind of interview the other day. But he basically, he basically said, Frank, come get me. without saying, Frank, come get me. I mean, he was like, look, I want to go play, you know, on a team with somebody that I'm, you know, with somebody I know. And until that happens, I'm going to, you know, keep competing with these third stringers here in Chicago and lighten up our defense. Like, that's literally what he said. And that's kind of a little out of character for him. But look, he still views himself as a starter. He thinks that he can play at a really high level if he's with a coach that he wants to be with, and Frank certainly is that. And he's buried in Chicago. I mean, think about this. You know, I know there's been a fair amount of conversation about the Titans backup situation. I think you could look at a few other teams and, you know, question how they've addressed their backup situation. Nick Foles is Super Bowl MVP, and he is the third guy behind Andy Dalton, Justin Fields. He's getting very little reps. He's making a good amount of money, and he wants out of there. So, that situation in Chicago is awful for Nick right now.
There's no question. And so what would it take? Because another part of this could be, and I know there's also salary cap implications, you guarantee a contract if he's on your roster past week one, you're probably thinking ahead there, but could you play the game of almost waiting for the Bears to cut Nick Foles? They're going to have to do that, aren't they? He's not going to make this team, is he?
I think they are, which is why, you know, the reps are, you know, have been what they've been, you know, for him in Chicago. You know, you would think that's the case. I'm pulling it up here because when you look at it, Nick Foles has a base salary of $4 million this year. He's got a cap hit of $6.5 million roughly and a dead cap. So if they were to cut him, of $14 million. So like, it's actually in some ways cheaper to keep him with a potential out after next year, you know? So I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion. I think there's maybe an element of you keep him, and wait for a team to get desperate. Hey, Wentz comes back. They think he's good. You know, he comes back at 9 weeks and then boom, his foot, you know, has a setback or something. So I think there's a shot that they end up keeping him. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, that they definitely need to cut him. Because think about this too, like Dalton's making good money, not amazing money, and Fields is on his rookie deal. So like just pure allocated dollars to the quarterback position, you know, Chicago is still going to be less than some teams that are paying a top-tier quarterback on a new contract.
This is definitely where you make your money as a GM. If you're the Colts and Chris Ballard right now, like you said, it's a team that wants to win now. They usually set themselves up that they have flexibility in their cap. I haven't looked at all the particulars, but they're pretty good at not running up against it to where they limit their options. So it looks like they've got a lot of options here. But, wow, what a tough call. Especially not knowing exactly what the injury is going to look like post-surgery.
In
injury is going to end up looking like. So, you know, that to me is a challenge. And I think, you know, we've talked about the Deshaun Watson situation. Just think about the division now. You know, off a couple of awesome seasons, and now you got a disaster in Houston. You've got a rookie quarterback in Jacksonville, and you've got an injured quarterback who's got a big-time injury history in Indianapolis. Like, you know, I think for as much as I've been talking about, you know, the Colts being a potential Super Bowl caliber team, you know, the Titans, you know, are getting to the point where, I mean, I think you got to start to favor them to win the division.
Well, that would certainly that's certainly the expectation. And the last couple of days, they've lost Julio Jones. Mike Vrabel today being pretty upfront with the media, saying, you know what, he's gonna miss some practices. We're gonna be cautious with him. There's gonna be days you see him on the side field. I think we kind of anticipated that this was gonna be something that they would be dealing with the day that they traded for him, even prior to them trading for him. But this happened awfully quick, right? It didn't take many practices before he's been gone for a couple of days.
Yeah, and you just wonder. I think the key here is, did you know it? Like, did you, like, I guess we all kind of know, like, hey, this is going to happen. There's going to be a Wednesday during the season he's not practicing. Or, I mean, maybe all week he doesn't practice and it's week 10, but everyone's good because, you know, he said he's good to go and, you know, the ankle's fine and the hamstring's fine. Yeah, you just wonder how much, like, this was in motion already, or if it's, you know, if it's something different than that. I mean, we've talked about these 32-year-old receivers played a lot. And then I think, remember back to when I said, well, you know, it's weird. He's been targeted, you know, in NFL history, he's been targeted more per game than any player ever. So like Jerry Rice, Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, ever, anybody. And so I think that, like, okay, well, now you're not practicing, and it's training camp, and, you know, Ryan Tannehill doesn't have a long history with him. And so, you know, how big can his role be if he's got limited practice reps, and is he going to still be happy, you know, if he's, I mean, really playing second fiddle in the offense, and maybe even third fiddle when you think about, you know, what they want to do with the run game. So those are the things I'd be concerned about, and those are the things that I think that's where you talk about Chris Ballard, you know, earning his money, you know, living, you know, being the GM of the Colts in their situation. I think it's where Mike Vrabel's got to be great in terms of managing the expectations of some of the star players.
Talking with Tim Hasselbeck here from ESPN for his weekly NFL Talk visit. And Tim, there's one story that is, to me, it's a little bizarre because you don't see players comparing publicly, I guess, the contract with them and a teammate, Xavien Howard, cornerback for the Dolphins, one of the best corners in the league, had 10 interceptions last year, made a, I don't know if it was an Instagram post, but he made a social media post, and it's pretty long, and I'll paraphrase it by, it's him explaining his contract situation. He's requested a trade away from Miami, for those who don't know, and during this post, the one little bit that got me was the quote, "I'm one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL, and the tape backs up that claim. The assignments I'm giving, shadowing the opposition's best player with little help, proves my value and my worth. Yet I'm the second highest paid cornerback on my own team, and it's not even close." When you hear that as, you know, from his teammate shoes, how are you supposed to feel if you're Byron Jones? I mean, you're going to have to be in the same meeting room with this guy. You're practicing in training camp with this guy. How is this going to go over, A, with his own team? Because it's not like he's just going to not play. He's requested a trade and said he's still going to play because of his love for his teammates. If you were his teammate, Tim, like, how is that going to go over in an NFL locker room?
Yeah, if you're Byron Jones, you're like, hold up, man. Like, yeah, I'm a former first rounder. I signed a big deal. Like, don't need you checking my pockets. Like, yeah, you definitely feel that way if you're Byron Jones. You know, I don't love it. At the same time, certain players, you know, they, because of their production, because of how good they are, because of their reputation, you know, feel like they can say certain things. I mean, it's like, you know, Tom Brady's come out and said, hey, I mean, don't want Michael Jordan on your team. I mean, he basically just came out and was like, you know, look, I'm the best ever, like, and said it. You know, so sometimes, like, people, I don't know. It's like, you know, be who you can afford to be. And I think Xavier Howard feels like, yeah, look, that's probably not cool. At the same time, I want a new in that Instagram post. I think he also references signing a contract a few years ago and not fully understanding the contract.
That was weird too.
And so, like, yeah, and so part of that for me is a little bit, and Philadelphia used to do this all the time. They would get a player, draft him in the fifth round or something. They knew that he was good. Boom, they'd offer him another five-year deal, like, as soon as they could, and, you know, put some money in the guy's pocket, you know, right away. That's what Xavier Howard did. And so I think that, you know, comparing yourself and what you're making to other players that you may be better than doesn't always make sense, because some guys, like in Byron Jones' situation, look, they got further into their rookie deals before they signed new contracts. And they came to the market, you know, at a time where maybe other guys at the position weren't available. And so, hey, you were the top free agent at the time. It's no different than Kirk Cousins. Like, Kirk Cousins making more money than quarterbacks that aren't as good as him, but that's because he bet on himself. So, yeah, I kind of see it both ways. At the same time, if I had to pick a side, I'd pick the Dolphins side on this one. I think it's kind of bad business calling out Byron Jones.
Yeah, definitely a weird look. It's not something you see often, a star player calling out somebody else on his own team saying, I'm better than them, and it's not even close, and I shouldn't even be the second highest paid cornerback on my own team. I definitely thought that was a little odd. And then kind of sticking with the theme of, I guess, shady teammate behavior, the Giants reportedly had a full-on brawl at their training camp yesterday. And, of course, these guys are going to have to practice again today. And reportedly, Coach Judge made them do a lot of sprints. I mean, obviously wasn't happy. This is something we see a lot in training camps, too. How easy is it for, I guess, players to be able to air all of that out, have a situation like that, and then just go to practice next day like nothing happened? That's always been, that's amazing to me, because this happens every year seemingly.
Yeah, I've seen it go both ways, where literally guys will be, you know, trying to rip each other's heads off and swing at them with their helmet, you know, Miles Jarrett style, and then, you know, 30 minutes later be in the locker room laughing and joking around. Like, so I've seen that. And then I've seen other guys where it's like they don't get over it, like they are never over it. And you know, between the Giants practice, which, you know, as you referenced, you know, Joe Judge has them running afterwards, and he's, you know, it's kind of, and coaches handle it that way. And then you have situations like in Detroit where they too had a fairly significant fight, and then you've got Dan Campbell being like, hey, I love it. I love the competitiveness. Like, this is what we need to have a little bit of energy out of practice. So, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, I would see it one way and think, yeah, hey, it's a good thing. And I think that's probably how that's definitely how I used to feel. You know, I used to, like, have a lot of respect for, like, the undrafted offensive lineman who, like, immediately started a fight to be like, look, don't test me. And then I think as I got older and saw coaches handle it differently, I thought, yeah, you know what? Like in the case of the Giants, if Daniel Jones ends up somehow on the bottom of the pile, like, that's really not ideal.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck. So, Tim, leave us with this. One thing that I've learned over the years, whether it's SportsCenter on a national level or on the local practice for the Titans, if you have an incident in practice that we're talking about, guarantee you're going to see the clip. Like today, Brady Breeze was kicked out of practice on the last day or the last play of the scrimmage today. Of course, that's the first question that Mike Vrabel answers. So I guess my question is, can we agree that doesn't this get overblown? Like, are we even going to remember that this happened in a couple weeks? Probably not. Like, but it always gets that immediate attention just because it looks crazy. When you're sitting there watching a football practice, does it really mean anything?
No, it really doesn't. It really doesn't. And I think that, like, players know it's just kind of how it goes. I mean, think about this, guys. I mean, go outside. It's actually been fairly mild here, I think, relatively speaking.
Yes, but mercifully.
It's hot, you know, right? So, like, it's hot. And so now imagine you are – you know, 300 pounds. And imagine that you've got pads on. And imagine you've got another 300-pounder, you know, just leaning on you all afternoon. And then imagine you've made a few mistakes and, you know, maybe there's a younger, cheaper, you know, option at your position that's having a decent little practice. And, like, so, like, and everyone knows that those things are going on, right? So everyone knows. Or imagine that you're, you know, some young guy who's, like, trying to get noticed, you know? And so even when coaches kick guys out of practice and Mike Vrabel says, like, hey, there's no place for it, that's a penalty in a game and that type of thing, like, that doesn't always mean that when they go back to the coaches' meetings, they're not like, hey, I kind of like to see that attitude out of that guy, you know? Like, no matter how they discipline the player. But you're right. Like, next practice, like, that's gone. That's over with. And certainly when we're talking about, you know, a matchup, you know, during the season against Carolina or Houston or whoever it is, you go, you know what, like, who even remembers? Like, no one even remembers the player that it was that got into that fight.
Tim, great stuff. We'll talk to you again next week. Enjoy these training camps as we watch, as we get closer to the start of the real deal here. It's great to have people out traveling around and being at training camp and watching practice.
No doubt. See you guys.
All right, Tim. Thanks a lot. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN, talking NFL football. Great stuff. When we come back, we'll get into a little more of this. I mean, tell me you have not seen this a million times. If you're watching a local newscast, it's like clockwork. If there's an incident in practice, it doesn't matter who the players are, whether it's a star player or a complete unknown who has no chance of making the team, it gets shown. Oh my gosh, there was a fight today at practice. We'll talk about that more when we come back. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more coming. At 1 o'clock, we go to Houston, talk to Clint Sterner. We'll figure out what's going on with the Texans and all of their challenges, and they've got a lot. Stay tuned. We're coming back. On Friday, it's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick to Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game Sunday, you win a prize pack and a four-pack of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Participate Friday morning at 9:45 with Robbie and Rex Road. Of course, first things first, it's the New England Revolution tonight. A big, big one for Nashville SC. And then Sunday, they've got another road game. A little three-game road trip this week, all in about an eight-day span. Big challenge, but these guys are playing some excellent soccer right now. You heard the kung fu fighting. A little incident of practice today. I always just shrug my shoulders and say, oh boy, what are the local newscasts going to look like tonight? I don't know if anybody caught it on tape, but apparently Brady Brees, not to be confused with Tom Brady, Drew Brees. I know that's probably a well-told joke, dad joke, whatever, but
has to by now. If it hasn't, we'll make it now.
Yeah, I don't know if he's even going to make the team, but the first four questions to Mike Vrabel were about that incident. It's just unbelievable. It's something that you mark the time with every August, that if there is a fight, a skirmish, anything at a practice, it's going to be the first thing shown on the highlight shows. But it means really nothing.
Yeah.
I think.
Means nothing. It's, to me, it's just fascinating because these guys will go out in these all-out brawls. Just like, because there's, unfortunately, there's no video of the Giants fight. But apparently it was an all-out brawl, offense, defense. Logan Ryan got involved. Evan Engram was throwing hands. Like, these guys will do all of this, and then the next day they're just going to be cool with each other. In some instances, it's like nothing happened. And like Tim says, in some instances, people don't get over it. Mm-hmm. So that's always the fascinating thing for me. And it gives you something else to talk about training camps. Like, position battles are cool. Position battles are more fun when they're punching each other. Then it's a little more interesting. Then we get a little saucy. Then the TV value of training camp definitely goes up a little bit. I almost cheer for kind of stuff like this, as long as no one tramples on like a player like Daniel Jones on the bottom of a pile. Obviously not ideal, but hey, we're going to throw some hands. That shows some different types of competitiveness here. Do it now while it's not flaggable.
Also begs the all-time question of why would you ever punch a person with a football helmet on?
Oh, so, the age yeah. old. Yeah, that, I mean, that is like I've had coaches refer to that as the stupid test before. I mean, if you're going to punch somebody with a helmet on, then you might fit that bill because that stuff's not soft. It is meant to protect the melon.
Eye candy with not a lot of substance. Now, let's talk about something that might be pertinent here. We quizzed Tim Hasselbeck on the challenge for the Colts here, trying to figure out when can I get a gauge on how long Carson Wentz is going to be out. how long do I take before I try to either make a move or don't make a move to bring in another guy? Let's talk about the Philip Rivers part of this. He went on the record. He talked. He retired in January, and the logical thing was for the media, especially the Colts media, to call up Philip Rivers and see what he's doing. We know he's coaching high school football. And so he told the LA Times on Tuesday that he's staying in shape in case a situation presents itself. And get this, for a late season stint in the NFL. Now, why would that be? The Colts need an early season stint, not a late season stint. So let's read a little further. Quote, "I'm not quite there." Rivers, who's 39, told the LA Times, "I'm getting back there. I wouldn't have made weight if I had to report last week, that's for sure. But I'm getting back into the lifting and running. And shoot, I occasionally throw a ball around here in this heat. It's not too hard to get a good lather going. I'm just going to stay ready. I want to make sure I'm very clear. I'm not predicting I will play in December or January for that matter. One, you've got to have somebody who wants you. And two, it's got to be right. But I have not completely ruled that out." So I would agree with what Tim said, reading into those comments, that Philip Rivers isn't going to come in, play a couple weeks, fill the gap until Wentz comes back, and then bolt out of there. He wants to, if he's going to play, he'd rather be sort of the closer, jump in midstream, a la Mike Fisher for the Predators, right? You've retired, but you recharge the batteries and you play for the stretch run. But that doesn't match up with what the Colts are looking for there. Fair to say?
Not at all. Oh, not at all. I mean, you need someone.
It also sounds like he's not in shape.
Yeah, exactly. The minute when he says, "I wouldn't have made weight at this training camp," like, that's a process in its own to be able to not only get to playing weight, get to playing shape and everything that that entails. And even though it's not like Philip Rivers is going to be running around the place for 1,000 yards in a season, he's going to have to be in, you know, in NFL shape to be able to play the season. And that would take about half the regular season. And by that point, Carson Wentz is healthy. And then there's really no need for Philip Rivers at that point. I kind of agree with what Tim said in the middle of that as well, where if you're the Colts, just say Jacob Eason's our guy right now. And I mean, say what you say that publicly, and then behind closed doors, closely evaluate A, the options that are obtainable. I mean, is a Nick Foles trade obtainable? Is a Marcus Mariota trade obtainable? And be able to make that decision after a preseason game or the second preseason game, or after a couple weeks in training camp. It would have to be blatantly obvious to me that this guy cannot handle the starting position, and neither could Sam Ehlinger or Brett Hundley or the other guys on that roster for me to be able to make that move. I mean, I think you at least be able to have to see what Eason has, because you're going to have to go in with your best option one way or another, because their first 5 weeks of the season, you were playing teams that won at least 10 games. The easiest game on that schedule from those first five is going to be the Miami Dolphins, who went 10-6. Not exactly a cupcake schedule to start the season. So I think that's the best option they have. I mean, instead of negotiating teams, because you have no leverage in these negotiations, you're going to have to give something up for a rental QB for anywhere from, what, 5 to 7, 8 weeks, realistically?
Let's go back to Rivers for a second here. This really fascinates me, that this, because the timing, you know the timing of this article. It's coupled with the Wentz injury. Something tells me that before they ran these quotes, whoever did the article probably was asking Philip Rivers, well, you know, what about this Colts thing? Somewhere in here, it wouldn't shock me at all if Rivers said, I don't want to mention any specific team. Because when you say things like, I'm getting back there, I'm getting back into the lifting and running, and the article says he's staying in shape in case a situation presents itself for a late season stint, none of that jives at all with the Colts. You know, so you would think logically this article, the next question would be, well, what about the Colts? So either the person interviewing them has no clue, which I don't think is the case, or Rivers just said, I'll go on the record here, but I'm not going on the record about the Colts. Because it's just it doesn't make sense. So at 39, a guy that had trouble getting around last year, and who hasn't clearly, I mean, first of all, he's got a job. He's trying to coach a football team. So he's not full-time on the workout load, and he pretty much admits he hasn't prepared for a season like he normally would. And when you're 39, you got to work extra hard in the offseason to prepare your body for this. It does not sound like a viable option to me, even though it's being discussed. This does not jive at all. If I'm Chris Ballard and I'm reading this, I'm like, well, cross him off the list.
I would say, cool. Thanks for getting back in shape. Maybe you can do something for somebody, but not us.
So then the question is that down the road, you know, does Rivers come into the picture as a late season pickup? That seems a little bit unrealistic, but we'll see.
I mean, he didn't look good at the end of last year
he was limited. He was very limited.
Incredibly limited.
Hey, give him credit. They won 11 games with them in there. So it's not like he was horrendous, but he wasn't great, and he's a year older, and like we said, he's not prepared for the season like he has before. So,
and that's one of the things with Philip Rivers, too, is like Drew Brees can make do with an arm that's completely shot because he is a very risk-averse quarterback. He's very self-aware. He knew the throws he could and couldn't make, and while being incredibly limited physically, was still being able to make the Saints a top 7 team in offensive DVOA, according to Football Outsiders, another analytics plug right there. But the Colts were not the same way because Philip Rivers used to lean a lot on that arm too, and his decision making hasn't always been the best because he's always, you know, up there in interceptions. He throws a ton of picks, takes a ton of risks, nowhere near the type of risk aversion quarterback that someone who can make it longer in the league without that type of arm strength. I mean, at this point in Philip Rivers' career, there's what pros really are there to him compared to anybody else that would be on your roster? It would have to be a dire situation for you to bring in a Philip Rivers that's way past his prime, still interception prone, and isn't able to stretch the field anymore.
So the obvious choice looks like Foles. If they're going to go down this road,
it would have to be.
And it does make a lot of sense. And as you heard Tim Hasselbeck say, he's basically telegraphing to the Colts, hey, man, rescue me. I'm sitting out here. I'm in a life raft. Come on over. Scoop me out of the water. Put me on your boat and let's go play. But tell me this, Elijah, if you are Carson Wentz, you just got to this new team, you're reunited with Frank Reich, and then here comes Nick Foles. Well, that's a really interesting thing. I have a lot of confidence, if I'm the Colts, that Frank Reich figures out ways to have this work out. But what an awkward storyline to have pop up there.
Oh, you'd hated it, if you're Carson Wentz, because you can't escape this guy. Especially, heaven forbid, Nick Foles starts the first 6-7 weeks of the season, and the Colts are 7-1 or 6-2 and are leading the AFC South. And then it's like, do we want to bring Carson Wentz back? And then it's this deja vu all over again if you're Carson Wentz. Injury, Nick Foles comes in, and the team is just better without you, or doesn't, you know, miss a step. Like, for him, that's tough. But if you're the Colts, I mean, you can't really take that into consideration right now if you're not confident in Jacob Eason can get you to at least 500 by the time he comes back. Because if you go 0-5 in that stretch, you're done. You're not making the playoffs. It would take something catastrophic here in Nashville with the Titans for that to be a reality, because that's the only way they could come back would be to win this division, especially with how loaded the AFC is, with the amount of teams that were really good playoff teams last year. The Dolphins were 10-6, didn't get in the playoffs. It'll be something similar this year because the AFC is just so deep, so their only chance would be to win the division. They go 0-5, it would take a meltdown or a catastrophic injury for the Titans not to be able to win that division. So if you're Carson Wentz and Foles, they are able to trade for Foles, and they go, 5-2, 6-2? You can't feel great about being able to keep that job. But if you're the Colts, you can't worry about that. Carson Wentz's mental fragility shouldn't be the reason you don't make a trade that could salvage your season when you have a roster that could win a Super Bowl with that defense and the amount of weapons they got, and finally investing in some receivers and wide receiver depth in the running game they have. The long term
pieces are in place.
The pieces are in place. You can't, that's got to be on the very bottom of the list of things you have to worry about, is if Carson Wentz is going to cry himself to sleep if you bring in Nick Foles.
You've got two teams in the Colts and the Titans that are built to win this year. That's a dynamic that should be top of mind when you consider the moves that are made. This is a chance, even though you're trying to beat a very stacked AFC. This is a really deep conference for sure, but huge chance to go win another division title. What moves do you make? Stay tuned. We're going to come back. I'm going to introduce. We're going to read you a little piece that was done. It's interesting. It's a Russian interview with a guy named Nikita Zadorov. And if you're a Predator fan, you know who this is. He's played for a number of different teams. Played a lot of games against the Predators. But he was once a teammate for a good number of years with Nathan MacKinnon. He writes some things, and he sort of equates it with playing with Michael Jordan. Not that he played with Michael Jordan, but probably like everybody else during the pandemic, we all are brushing up on our Michael Jordan history with The Last Dance. This was a huge theme. Playing with a guy who is so driven and so crazy almost as a teammate. What is that like? We're going to read a little bit of it, and we're going to ask the question, would you want to play with this guy? Nathan MacKinnon, one of the best players in the NHL for sure, but a little pull back the curtain, if you will, on some of his daily habits. Would that be fun to play with or not so fun? We're going to tell you about it when we come back, and then at 1 o'clock we go to Houston, talk to Clint Sterner, and we talk Texans. Stay tuned. We're coming back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nashville SC and the New England Revolution have a huge match to take over first place in the Eastern Division this Wednesday night. Join us for a fun watch party over on the east side, Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. You can enjoy great beer specials on Heineken Plus. They will be giving away tickets to the next Nashville SC home game. So mark your calendar to watch Nashville SC take on the New England Revolution. Tonight at 6, we'll have the game for you on 94.9 Game 2. And you can go hang out at the watch party with some other Nashville SC fans. They will be there at the new and improved Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House, 1003 Russell Street, 5 points in East Nashville. It is great stuff. It took a lot of damage from the tornado. They have battled back. It looks great. That whole area, little by little, it's going to be better than ever when it's all done. It's already taking shape. So hang out on the east side. You're going to like it if you've been watching Nashville SC. Now, as we mentioned before, Chase, I sent you this last night. It was a really interesting. It was a Russian interview, so it's been translated, and the heading is, and I don't even know. It got sort of recirculated onto one of my people that I follow. It says this excerpt from a Russian interview where Nikita Zadorov talks about Nathan MacKinnon is pretty. I don't know, inspiring, eye opening, the literal price of greatness. Now, you tell me what your reaction was when you read this. I'm just going to read a quick thing. This is Nikita Zadorov, who I'm trying to think. I think he's still on the Blackhawks. I don't think he changed addresses. There was a lot of speculation he might get picked up by the Kraken. But he has gone from the Sabres to then Colorado for a long time and then now the Blackhawks. So he played with Nathan MacKinnon for a while. He's no longer a teammate of his, but this was his insight. I saw the progression in Nate's game. He's such a pro. He has a dietologist. He pays $50,000 a year. He has a live-in doctor, physiotherapist, in his house during the season. He pays him $1,000 each day. I don't know if this has been verified. This is just...
Or math checked.
Math checked. I don't know. You know, rubles, dollars. I don't know, but... The point is, this is an investment here. In addition, he rents him an apartment. He rents him an apartment. He has his own chef. He pays another $100,000 a year. He simply invests in himself and his own body so he can play at the highest level. So, dietologist, $50,000 a year. Doctor, physiotherapist, $1,000 a day, according to Zadorov.
So I guess $365,000 a year.
Okay, I guess. I don't know. And then another $100,000 for a chef. He's crazy that way. He eats right. He doesn't drink. He drinks only water. 2 years ago in Colorado, he got rid of all the pop, ice cream, desserts. He got rid of all of them from the dressing room and the pregame meals. He even got rid of white sauce for pasta. He replaced the actual pasta itself with chickpea pasta that has more protein, etc. He made pros out of our entire Colorado team. That's one of the reasons that Colorado got such an improvement in performance over the last couple of years. He says, guys, if you want to eat that crap, you have the off season for that. When you come here, There will be none of that because we're winning the cup. All the young guys see it. They look up at him. They try to do their part. McKinnon is like Michael Jordan. I don't want to make a direct comparison, but his way of thinking is very similar to MJ. He can be a jerk to his teammates, line mates. You need to accept that. And it would improve you as a hockey player as a result. If you can't accept it, you're off the team. He's always the hardest working guy. He comes out 30 minutes before practice, always working on his hands. Young guys see that, and he still wants to improve. It motivates them, the young players, to work even harder. If you miss a pass in practice, he would skate over and literally scream at you. You can't pass him the puck without hitting his stick. We had young players come over during the playoffs. If the puck ends up in his skates, not even in his skates, if it misses his stick by a tiny bit, like 15 centimeters in front of the blade of the stick, he doesn't move his stick to catch the puck. He stops everything, turns around, and slaps the puck back at you. He's not going to try to receive any puck he doesn't like during practice, just to show you that you made a bad pass. He doesn't use that word, but bad slash bleepity bleep kind of
pass. Crappy pass. No.
He's a guy that demands the most and demands that everyone leaves everything out there to maximize their abilities. So Hal Gill saw this, I noticed, and he said, two things would happen if I played with him. Either I would kill him or he would kill me within 10 games. So that is really the dynamic. And it got talked about a lot with The Last Dance with Jordan. Now, Nathan McKinnon doesn't have the skins on the wall that Jordan does. But Jordan started doing this before he ever won any rings. Nathan McKinnon is one of the five best players in the NHL. Completely dynamic. The stuff aside about, you know, the investment at home, I don't know what he'd be like to live with. It sounds like he's got a high regimen, high discipline level. That's one thing.
I have to ask his $500,000 doctor that he pays.
Or $365,000, $1,000 a day. You know, sounds like we could get, you know, if we could
That's
just hit
steep.
Him up with a job, what could we do for, you know, for $100 a day or something?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I mow his lawn or something.
Something.
I don't know. Yeah.
Sounds like you make a little money on the side just doing some things for Nathan at the house. But the question would be, what do you think of this? Like, some people's reaction on Twitter was, oh my gosh, that's the ultimate guy. I'd love to have him on my team. What a driven guy. This is amazing. And then others were more like, how? They'd be like, okay, would I really want to play with this guy? Is this helping? Does this really help Colorado win a championship? I think it's a fine line.
Oh, it's a great question to ask, too. And personally, I mean, if you step in between me and an ice cream sandwich after a game, I don't care for Hal Gill. I think we're throwing hands. I think that's how that dynamic's going to go. But not everybody's built the same, too. And I love having this conversation because, like, the thing about leadership is there's not one direct way to do it because everybody is different. If everybody was the same, then there would be one way to do everything. It's like in college basketball. Tom Izzo and Jay Wright are two of the more accomplished coaches to exist in the sport. They are two totally different coaches. Tom Izzo will grab your jersey. He'll scream in your face. He don't care if your grandmother's watching. He is going to do what he can to do what he thinks is going to get the best out of you. Whereas Jay Wright is mild-mannered, but also a good leader. He's a collaborative type of leader. There's some that are authoritarian, some that are a little more collaborative. Draymond Green is wired more like Tom Izzo. That's why that marriage worked really well. That's why they were very successful when he was on that team and was the best player on that team, because the best player mirrored the coach. Draymond Green wouldn't do as well in Villanova with Jay Wright coaching. The mm-hmm. same way some players at Villanova would not do the same way if Tom Izzo's screaming in their face. People are just wired differently. I would not be able to play with Nathan McKinnon, because if you stop practice to make a point that I made a bad pass, then A, I don't think we're going to get much done. B, I don't think that's going to help me much. We can talk about it after. We can stay after practice, and I can practice that pass, and we could work around it that way. That type of intimidation wouldn't fly as well with me personally, but for some, that's how you get the best out of them. Some people, right. Like with Kobe Bryant, he had teammates that's how he got the best out of him. Sasha Vujacic got the best out of himself because Kobe Bryant demanded so much out of him in practice, even if it meant embarrassing him in front of everybody else. You did not get the best out of Nick Young because he did not, the way they have, you know, their practices with Kobe Bryant being more of an authoritarian type leader, they did not fall in line with that. Those teams were awful, and you didn't get the best out of those players because that's just not how those guys were wired as well. It really just depends on the type of person you are.
I think we all were dealing with this. You could see a lot of the teammates of Michael Jordan try to, in a very diplomatic way, Will Perdue was one of them. Steve Kerr was certainly one of them. B.J. Armstrong throughout, talking about how, you know, there were some really rough days where they could not stand it. Like, what? Who is it? They hate it. But they all sort of admitted that maybe it did bring out the best. It made them better players. Does that make it worth it? I think they would say, well, they got some rings, so it's got to be worth it to some degree. But is there a different way that they could have done it and still won those rings? That's the question that we'll never answer.
It's a great question, yeah.
And Michael Jordan, I love when he defended how he did it, even though he got very emotional. He said, there's nothing that I was demanding other players to do that I wasn't doing. That means a lot. And
which is what made him a really bad GM down the road, because not everybody's Michael Jordan.
Nathan McKinnon, it looks like he's exhibiting a lot of the same things. So it's a really insightful piece by Zadorov, who I wouldn't have known one way or the other that he was, I don't know what precipitated this conversation, but it was a really good window into a guy's personality. A lot of people did say that the captain of the Avalanche is Gabe Landeskog for a reason, and they went out of their way to bring him back, not just because Landeskog is a pretty darn good player, but also he's a guy that tempers that dynamic in the locker room really well, that McKinnon, maybe if he were the captain, maybe that wouldn't go over so well with some people. You need sort of a buffer. So that's the interesting part. Michael Jordan, unquestioned leader of the Bulls. McKinnon's doing this. He's not even the captain. It's Landeskog that's the captain. So just something to keep in the back of your mind with the Avalanche coming back into the Predators division this year. And they will be a heavy favorite to win the Central. They'll be among the top two or three favorites to win the Cup
easily this year. Mm-hmm. Makes you want to be a fly on the wall during those practices, though, yeah. That's for sure.
I'll be watching Morning Skate a little closer next time.
Earsley perked a little bit.
See if he misplays some passes or starts yelling at somebody during the Morning Skate. All right, when we come back, we'll shift back to football. We're going to talk to Clint Sterner. Covers the Houston Texans down in the Lone Star State. A lot of issues for the Texans. We'll try to make some sense of it when we come back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase.